Hello, everybody, and welcome to American Pale Males, your nerdy beer tasting podcast. I'm your co-host, Mike, and with me is...
Michael,
how you been?
Good. Excellent.
Excellent. Excellent. Excellent. All right, all right, all right. Michael, let's get right into it, we always do. We don't beat around the bush when it comes to this podcast. We go straight into the beer brags.
Beer brags,
What do you got, Michael?
Well, Mike, it is that time. We kind of mentioned it on the last podcast. It's the time for Oktoberfest brews. And I've had a few lately.
Okay.
Authentic, straight from Munich, and otherwise.
Oh, wow.
So that German gastropub that I alluded to in a previous episode, I was there again.
Okay.
And I had Hofbräu's Oktoberfest beer.
Okay.
Very traditional, clean, light malts, and some subtle fruity hops. Very easy to drink. I also had Paulaner's Oktoberfest Weissen, which was similar, had a little bitter edge to it. Those were very good, very traditional Oktoberfest beers, official Oktoberfest beers, I guess you could say. But I've also had some quote-unquote corrupted Oktoberfest beers, too.
Okay.
I guess Oktoberfest-style beers would be the vernacular for that. I've had the Capital Oktoberfest, kind of standard, nice, warm, malty taste. Had the Great Dane Oktoberfest, a brew pub around here. Not bad. Had, for some reason, I don't know if it was just the batch I got or the brew line, but it had a kind of a bitter, astringent aftertaste that I couldn't really, didn't seem quite right to me.
Okay.
So I don't know what that was. But the best one I had so far is the one from Kelowna Brewing Company.
Oh, okay.
It's actually the best Oktoberfest I've had in recent memory.
Oh, wow.
It has a rich malty taste, just the right spiciness. Obviously not an official Munich Oktoberfest, but really good. Gave it 4 stars. And I may have some leftover, so maybe I could bring it on the show. Winking emoji. Just saying. Maybe look for that one in the future on this show. So
that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I was having a conversation with friends of the show, Meg and Jake, recently about Oktoberfests. Jake was doing a tasting with his father, I believe, of different kinds. And we kind of talked about how Oktoberfest isn't one we normally really reach for. We do for, you know, we'll get a couple for the season or whatever. But that sort of style of beer, while I like it a lot, but it's, I don't know what it is. And that and like a Kolsch is what I was saying is... I think they're both really tasty and good, but I usually would reach for something else over them. What is your experience?
Yeah, same here. And obviously at the German gastropub, that's a no-brainer.
Right.
But because, yeah, usually they don't surprise me too much. But this one from Kelowna was just packed the punch.
All right.
It just had a nice flavor. And it was called Limber Legs.
Limber Legs. Okay. Maybe I'll... I know we have some Kelowna in the local grocery stores here, so maybe I'll see if I can find that too.
Okay.
But if you're bringing it, then I'll wait.
Yeah. I do have a few in the fridge.
All right. Excellent. My beer brag isn't anything too crazy. Was at the local bar recently to watch the Iowa-Wisconsin game, which I believe you were at live.
Yeah, I did see it live. I did it live.
You did it live. We were watching that, and I got a Toppling Goliath Golden Nugget IPA on tap.
Ooh.
And it was fantastic. It is, I actually think it's for me at least, I think it was kind of comparable to Pseudo Sue as far as that nice, like, fruity, hoppy IPA. Really drinkable, really delicious. And it was made all the sweeter by an Iowa victory.
That's right.
Very low-scoring game.
Yes.
And the very last play was kind of a whimper to end the game, but it was good enough for the win for Iowa. Still undefeated. We'll see where that lands by the time this episode comes out.
Yes.
But so far, it's been a good season to watch. So, but yeah, Golden Nugget, I think that's one of the ones they widely distribute as well. So you might be able to find that. But yeah, this was on tap, so I think it was probably brewed in Decorah as opposed to Florida. But yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Very good.
Yeah. Michael, let's get to the next verb that we created last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The weekend geeking.
Yeah.
What have you been weekend geeking?
I've been weekend geeking... I actually have an addendum. I think it was two episodes ago we were talking about D&D stuff. Recently, I came across another thing that I'm like, oh, I forgot to talk about this in that episode. The Penny Arcade, which is a very well-known web comic strip that now has its own video game conventions and everything.
Right.
They have their own D&D adventures. It's also known as Acquisitions Incorporated.
Okay.
It started off as a podcast series. Evolved into something they do at all their Penny Arcade Expo events. So they're more heavy on the humor and entertainment, but they're only about 2 hours long. So they're nice little D&D encapsulation adventure. The DM is an excellent DM. His name is Chris Perkins, and he's quote-unquote the DM to the stars.
okay.
Geeky stars, of course.
So like Vin Diesel?
And... yeah, not quite those stars. More like fantasy writers
Will
and
Wheaton?
Stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he produces excellent adventures. There's also a great adventure that he does on YouTube, which I highly recommend people check out, with the robot chicken people.
Oh, okay.
There was new and old players alike. It's based on the old D&D edition, the fourth edition, but it's still great. So that one's a nice series. So yeah, either Chris Perkins in general or the Acquisitions Incorporated from Penny Arcade, both good things to check out.
Did you say they're 2 hours, so that's like a whole story, or is it just like a part of a story?
It's a whole story, but it's like there's continuity. Each year they add on to the adventure of this Acquisitions Incorporated.
Gotcha. Cool.
Yeah. We also mentioned the other D&D podcast, Adventure Zone. Mm-hmm. We mentioned that was by these people who their original podcast is My Brother and Me. Mm-hmm. So I started to listen to that, and it is an amazing podcast.
Okay,
so
I need to get into that one then.
So this is not D&D related. It's just a comedy podcast in general. Premises, they answer just about any questions sent in by listeners, and then hilarious conversation ensues.
Okay.
They also answer inane questions from the Yahoo Answers message board.
Okay.
And one of those was, does anybody know how to curse a real sword? And so they just went to town ripping on that and imagining that.
And okay.
Some segments are funnier than others, but at least once an episode, I laugh out loud, which to me is the pinnacle of a funny podcast, is when it can make you laugh out loud.
Right.
Regardless if you're sitting in your cubicle or driving to work. You just start laughing, even if people are staring at you. So hilarious references, good wordsmithing, great podcast. And Mike, I don't know if you've noticed this, but their voices remind me of characters from home movies.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah.
Griffin sounds like Brendan, and Justin sounds like Jason.
Sounds like Jason, yeah.
Yeah. So that, whenever I hear them talk, I picture those characters from the show Home Movies in my head, which makes it even funnier. So, but that, anyway, good show to check out.
I've actually heard about My Brother and Me for quite a few years now, and I've just never gotten into it, but I've enjoyed all of the other things those McElroy brothers have done on the internet, so I should really give that a listen.
Yeah.
I'll probably add it tomorrow.
Yeah, they're like in the 200s as far as the podcast goes, but you can jump in at any time. There's no like continuity or anything like that. So.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, maybe I'll check that one out then. Like, I need another podcast to listen to, but still. Awesome.
So what have you been Weekend Geekin', Mike?
Well, as I mentioned last week about a game my awesome wife gave me, the Sentinels of the Multiverse, she also got me a game called Mice and Mystics. This is a game that's kind of story based, similar in style to like the Imperial Assault, the new Star Wars dungeon crawling type game. Although this one came first. The basic idea is there's this like evil sorceress, and she turns these subjects into mice. And they're trying to get back to save the kingdom, basically. My wife and I only played the first mission so far. We lost. We got very close to winning. But the idea behind it is very interesting. You can, you know, you pick the mice that you play with, the characters you play with. They all have their certain attributes and weapons and things that they come with. And then you're fighting, like, rats and roaches and centipedes and things, and... we were actually done in by an old crow that kept picking us up and taking us out of the map, and we kept getting captured. So that's what did us in the end. But it's a cool game. There's like story bits in between each mission that you can read. The art is really neat, and I think that this game is going to put me into the incredibly nerdy world of miniature painting. So now I'm a terrible painter, like of big things, like just even walls. So we'll see how this goes. If I do at least a decent job, maybe I'll post it to the Twitter or something. I'll probably start with the roaches. They're the smallest things to paint and probably the easiest, and I'll go from there. But it's something I've been mildly interested on the sidelines about doing ever since friend of the show Jake started painting his Imperial Salt minis. And they do look a lot better once they're painted, as opposed to just like this tan color. So we'll see. But already I've taken a first step into a larger world with this particular game. So looking forward to, we're going to play the first mission over again, try and beat it this time. But yeah, it's a cool name, and it's again a cooperative game. So
oh yeah, like we were another talking about one last of those.
Yeah, definitely enjoying that one.
Cool,
Michael.
Yes,
according to the show notes, it's quiz time.
It is quiz time, and I have the quiz for you.
Excellent.
And it is based on the beer we're going to be drinking later.
Oh.
We'll see if the audience at home can guess the connection. Because okay. This is the Great Lakes Superlative Quiz.
Oh, boy.
This is all about the Great Lakes and okay. One question about basketball.
Of course.
Yeah. So, Mike, I hope you know your geology.
Okay, I don't, but...
Our geography, maybe a little okay. of each, and your Great Lakes, because here okay. we go. Which Great Lake is the deepest at its maximum depth? And I can name them if you want me to.
Okay.
They are Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, and Superior.
I'm going to guess Superior just from the name.
That is correct, Mike.
All right. Yeah.
Superior is the largest in volume and the deepest.
Okay.
And it's called Superior based on its position, not its anything else. But it also happens to be superior in those regards, too.
Okay.
All right. This is going to be a challenging one. Put these Great Lake cities in order from east to west.
Okay.
And they're in alphabetical order here. Chicago.
Okay.
Cleveland. Detroit. Milwaukee. Toronto.
Okay. Toronto's going to be a problem because I have no idea where that is in relation to these other ones.
Okay.
I think it's probably Milwaukee, Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, Toronto.
Yes. Well, you did west to east, but we're going to accept that.
Oh, whoops.
That's no big deal. You got the premise correct.
Yeah.
The one that are close to each other is Milwaukee and Chicago, but Milwaukee's mm-hmm. a little further west than Chicago is, so.
Okay.
So good job.
Thanks.
Speaking of Toronto.
Yeah.
What year did the Toronto Raptors play their first game?
Jeez.
I'll give you multiple choice here.
Okay.
Out
okay.
of three. Was it 93, okay. 95, 97?
I'm trying to... Okay, here's how I'm going about trying to answer this. I had the game NBA Hangtime for the Nintendo 64 as okay. a kid.
Very good.
And I can't remember if they were in that game or not. I know the Grizzlies were. I'm going to say 97.
Oh, it was 1995.
95.
Good try, though.
Thanks. I never played as them, so it was...
Yeah, expansion team. Pff.
Yeah, no kidding.
Back to the Great Lakes.
Okay.
Which of the Great Lakes is the smallest in surface area?
Okay.
Like square miles?
That's Holmes, right?
Yep.
Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, and... Superior. Well, it's not Superior.
Oh, yeah, yep, yep.
I'm going to say Erie.
Good guess, but it's actually Ontario.
Oh, okay.
They're pretty close.
Okay.
But Ontario is a little smaller.
Okay.
What is the name of the river that connects Lake Ontario to the Atlantic Ocean? It's probably something you know, but you haven't thought of in over 20 years.
Is this the Hudson?
It is not the Hudson.
That connects something to...
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No. I don't know.
It's the St. Lawrence River.
Oh, okay.
Which Great Lake is completely contained within the United States?
Oh.
Does not border Canada.
Okay. I'm going to guess Michigan on that one.
That is correct.
All right.
Lake Michigan. Apt, because it's named after a state.
Right. And it connects with Wisconsin as well, I believe.
Yeah. Finally, what percentage of the world's fresh water by volume is contained within the Great Lakes?
Oh, boy.
Is it 6%, 11%? 21% or 31%?
I'm going to say that the percentages of legal drinking age would say 21%.
That is correct, yes.
All right.
The world's fresh water, 21% in the Great Lakes alone.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's crazy. They're pretty great.
Pretty great.
So, good job, Mike.
Thanks.
Did very well.
I feel comfortable with how many answers I got right there.
Yeah, good job.
Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, is it that time?
I think it's that time.
Is it FDR time?
I think it's FDR time.
Where we find a beer, we drink the beer, and we rate the beer.
That's right.
Mike.
Yes.
I alluded to it earlier. What beer are we drinking today?
Today, we are drinking Great Lakes Brewing Edmund Fitzgerald Porter.
Bam, bam, bam.
To start off, we have to give thanks to a friend of the show, Aaron, for providing this to us. He was recently in that area and picked it up and gave us each a bottle for us to try for the show.
Yeah, very nice of him.
Let's get started with porters. Now, originally I was like, haven't we done a porter? Like, didn't we describe these already? And no, we did a stout.
That's right.
And I teased it way back when in episode 4. I went back and listened. I said, we won't talk about porters now because maybe we'll do one later. And here we are. It's later. We're doing it. So a little background on a porter. The name porter for this beer is thought to come from the beer's main consumers, which are porters. If you're wondering what a porter is, it's somebody who basically carries something, usually as like a job or for someone else, or as a slave, I noticed a lot as well. For a good example of a porter, a bellhop at like a hotel would be considered a porter. They carry your bags up to your room, that kind of thing. The origin was generally thought to be sort of a development of the brown beers that were being produced in London. Back then, brewers used to send their beers out immediately without letting it age at all. And then the aging was kind of dependent on the publicans, which is a fun word for a pub owner, or by the dealers that were selling it. So it was kind of up to their discretion as to how much they let it age before they served it.
Oh.
Porters were actually aged at the brewery, so they were able to be drunk immediately. It was one of the first beers that could be made on a really large scale. Early porters were about 6.6 ABV, so they're kind of on the strong side. Some things that kind of came out of brewing porters by the large London breweries, the use of the thermometer and the hydrometer were pioneered by these breweries at that time.
Wow, that sounds so basic, yeah.
I know. So with the hydrometer, brewers were able to accurately measure how much, you know, fermentable material they're getting from their malts, you know, the ABV, the alcohol content.
Yes.
By using the hydrometer, they found out that brown malt, which was cheaper than pale malts, actually only yielded 2/3 as much material. So then they started using pale malts, and they just added coloring to make it look like a porter to keep the price down and get more yield. Then, in 1816, a law was passed that only allowed malt and hops to be used in the production of beer. And water, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So they couldn't do the coloring anymore. It's kind of like the German law that we tried to pronounce a few episodes ago.
Yeah. The purity law.
Yeah, whatever. So brewers were kind of sunk for a while trying to make this style until Daniel Wheeler invented black malt, which is a barley malt that's been kilned to the point of carbonizing. So it's a really dark malt. They're able to use just a little bit of that to get the color and then the pale for the rest of it. Some brewers still used a little brown malt for flavor, but this was kind of the popular way of doing it. Porters kind of eventually lost their popularity, and they were starting to get weaker due to shortages of grain during World War I, or the Great War at the time. And actually, in the early 1950s, production sadly ceased on porters.
Oh.
But luckily, a revival of the style began brewing in 1978, and they are back in business.
Nice.
And I'm glad they are, too. They are a tasty type of beer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit of information about porters. I remember, I think the first time I ever saw a porter was, as we mentioned last episode, Sam Adams in their winter sampler has a holiday porter, I think it's called.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense.
And that was a really tasty introduction to porters for me. I enjoyed that. And I think I got a like a Michelob porter back when Michelob, I feel like, used to experiment a little bit more back in the day. I don't know. But anyway, so that's a little bit about porters. Now, moving on to the brewery, Great Lakes Brewing Company. It's in Cleveland, Ohio. It was founded by brothers Patrick and Daniel Conway, founded back in 1988. They recruited master brewer Thane Johnson and engineer Charlie Price. Both of these guys used to work at Schmitz, which was actually Cleveland's last operating brewery. So they got some good experience there. Together, they all developed beers based on styles that the two brothers experienced while they're traveling through Europe. They built in 19th century buildings, so kind of the opposite of last week. They used old buildings.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, the place they started, the brew pub and the restaurant they have, are still located in that original building. In their very first year, they brewed less than 1,000 barrels of kegged beer. So that's kind of telling you where they started. Just 2 years later, their Dortmunder-style lager, the Heisman, which is named after the first Heisman. He's from Ohio. I forgot his actual name, but it's called the Heisman. It won the gold medal at the Great American Beer Festival. So now, instead of the Heisman, the beer is called Dortmunder Gold.
Okay.
In 1992, they expanded, and before long, they outgrew that space as well. And they moved in operations into the space they're brewing in now. Since 2001, they've hosted the Great Lakes Burning River Fest, And I'll talk about that a little bit later in the environment ale section.
Oh, okay.
They started their own farm and joined the Ohio City Farm in 2010, so they're growing their own hops and everything. So in 2010, they brewed over 100,000 barrels. So from around 1,000 to 100,000 in a little over a decade. That's some pretty good growth. So like I mentioned, the Heisman, the year-round beers they brew are all named after people and events and things related to Ohio. They distribute to Columbus, Detroit, Chicago, Southeast Michigan, Indiana, and west to Minnesota and Wisconsin, south to North Carolina, and east to Syracuse, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Washington, D.C. So they have pretty wide range, at least more towards the eastern side of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into environment ale, there's a lot of information on this. Sustainability is really important to them. They recycle their promo material for heating an outdoor structure. They've got that Burning River Fest, which is actually an educational environmental music festival. With that, they've raised over $304,000 for organizations working in water conservation. They have a net negative waste bill. Like a lot of other places, they use spent grain feed for livestock, for soil amendment at their farms, a substrate for mushrooms. And they also use their low-fill beers. They were repurposed into sauces, ice cream, soups, and sausage.
Whoa.
Like I mentioned, they have their own farms. They source all their food from local purveyors. They reduce energy usage by using renewable energy. They installed a 12-panel solar thermal system, and they regularly conduct energy audits. Also, in addition to, you know, redeveloping those old 19th-century buildings, they have a beer garden that has radiant heat floors, and they have the city's first commercial straw bale wall, which I found really interesting. It's basically using straw bales as, you know, part of the wall or for insulation. It's a big part of the building, the construction of the building.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they're actually going brown in that way rather than going green. The restaurant vegetable oil is dewatered, filtered, and repurposed as fuel for their fatty wagon shuttle bus. So that's pretty cool. And I think they do that with some of their delivery trucks, too.
Oh, nice.
And then they also host meetings of Entrepreneurs for Sustainability, a business network in the greater Cleveland area. So they do a lot of great stuff, and it's always heartening to see breweries be really responsible with their business and try and reuse as much as possible and, you know, stay green as possible. It's cool to see.
For sure.
Now that we've heard about porters and the brewery, let's go specifically to the Edmund Fitzgerald. This is named after the SS Edmund Fitzgerald. It was a Great Lakes freighter that sank in a Lake Superior storm back on November 10th, 1975. And the entire crew of 29 perished in the ship sinking. When the ship was launched on June 8th, 1958, she was the largest ship on North America's Great Lakes, and she remains the largest to have sunk there.
Yes. Good Gordon Lightfoot song.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard that one, but I'll check it out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When you hear, you'll probably recognize
it. Their description on it, robust and complex, our porter is a bittersweet tribute to the legendary freighter's fallen crew, taken too soon when the gales of November came early.
Oh.
Brewed in memory of the sunken freighter with rich roasted barley and bittersweet chocolate coffee notes. Pairs with oysters, chocolate, and heartfelt balladry. Maybe that's what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, I noticed when I was researching the beer, they have two recipes on their website that feature the beer. So that's kind of cool.
Hmm.
You can cook with beer. It's got Northern Brewer, Willamette, and Cascade hops. For malts, it's got Harrington two-row base malt, Crystal 77, chocolate, and roasted barley. It's going to be a dark brown color, 6% ABV, and 37 IBUs.
Let's take a look here.
Pulling this bottle out. Yeah, there's like an artistic representation of the ship on the front.
Oh, yeah. In the storm?
Mm-hmm. When I was researching it, it said that there was the number 29 on it somewhere to represent the crew.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking for that.
But I don't see it. Maybe it's a different packaging or maybe on the box or something.
Or it's a secret.
Yeah, maybe I have to like hold it under a black light or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you can find that, write in.
Yeah, definitely. I noticed on their website they were talking about rebranding. I don't know if this has come since their rebranding, and maybe that's why they don't have the number on there anymore. So
All right.
I don't see anything else too notable to mention about the bottle, so I think we should dive in.
Let's give this a go here.
Giving it a pour here into a modern no-nick glass. Looks nice and dark.
Oh, yeah. Like, so I'm holding it up right to the computer screen, and not a drop of light is getting through.
I'm holding it up to a lamp I have here, and I can kind of see a little, like, copperish on the edges, but yeah, it's pretty thick.
Yeah. I assume it's clear as in there's not sedimentation in there, but it's just so...
As far as I can tell, yeah.
Dark. Yeah, yeah, as far as I can tell, it's clear, but...
Not much of a head.
Yeah, it's kind of dissipated already.
Going for that nose.
Yeah.
I actually am kind of surprised it's taken us less long to do a porter.
Yeah, that's just kind of something that hasn't come up yet, but I'm glad we're doing it now.
It's got a nice, like a coffee aroma.
Yeah, it's not like super potent. You have to kind of get your nose in there, but it's definitely that dark roasted malt coffee type.
Michael, go ahead and go in there. I'm going to keep nosing it.
All right.
Get that really, the coffee, really dark chocolate smell. I'm looking forward to giving it a sip.
Mm, yeah, it starts out nice and mellow, kind of washes over the tongue with a nice chocolatey, mellow flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the back end, you get that classic porter finish. Just like a little hoppy bitterness that kind of lingers on the tongue.
Definitely. That little coffee flavor kind of comes in at the end there.
Yeah. Yeah, the more bitter flavors.
Oh, wow. At the that end, is for sure. Delicious.
It is enjoyable. Very good.
Mm-hmm. This is the kind of thing I keep mentioning that's going to get me back into. When I was a younger drinker, I always had the adage of the darker the beer, the better.
Yeah.
And then I got into hops really in a big way, and I kind of left my dark beer friends behind, but this is delicious.
Good walk down memory lane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it almost finishes like a cup of coffee, iced coffee.
Yeah, with a little sugar in it.
Kind of a tasty bitterness, though, not a shuddering bitterness.
Mm. Yeah, I'm enjoying this. It's like, it's everything I want from like a dark porter. Now, porters sometimes can just be random. I've definitely had some porters that felt like, you know, a kitchen sink type brew.
Yeah.
But I prefer this type of porter where it's, you know, the chocolatey.
Yeah, the flavor is real mellow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've had some porters that really finish hard as far as being bitter. And this one, while it does have a fairly robust bitterness to it, it's not anything that's going to turn a more experienced beer drinker away.
Right. The 6% is pretty masked. I mean, that's not really that much higher than a regular brew, but it's indistinguishable.
Yeah, this one, how we kind of say, oh, it's a good introductory beer, like we were talking about last week with the inaugural red. This one I would hesitate to give somebody who is trying to get into beers, at least right away. Maybe start them off with a stout as far as something more sweet, not as bitter at the end, and then say, okay, this is kind of like a hopped up version of a stout.
Sure. Unless they're a coffee drinker, I would be...
Well, that's true. I guess it depends on their preferences and taste, but generally speaking...
This is definitely doing it for me.
I haven't had a dark beer in quite some time, actually, so...
Yeah, we've been kind of skewing towards, you know, the ambers, the IPAs, the more golden. And I know that the Gigi, which recently won an award, the Exile Gigi, was one of our favorites. So, I don't know what it is that we keep veering towards these lighter ones, but this is really good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Michael, we established last episode that whoever introduces the beer has to rate it first.
Yeah, whoever thinks it, drinks it.
That's right. I'm going to go in for another taste of judgment here.
All right, lock in that number that you're thinking of. I'm curious.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like I just said before, it's everything I like in like a dark beer that isn't like a stout, I guess. I don't know. Like your Dunkels and your porters, obviously.
Right.
It's hitting the spot. It's got that nice little bit of complexity to it with the chocolate and then the bitter back end. And I'm feeling this one, Michael. I'm going with a 4.
Wow. Ooh, yeah. Nice. Okay, I can feel that. So porters to me, I guess when it comes to dark beer, maybe I might prefer stouts a little more just because you get that kind of unfiltered, pure maltiness, whereas porters kind of add another dimension, which not a bad thing, but for me, maybe is distracting just for my palate.
Okay.
Again, kind of hearkening back to my aversion to strong hopped beers. Not saying this is strong hopped, but I just prefer a more pure experience. So that factors into my final decision.
Okay.
Just throwing out my personal preference out there before people get mad. I'm going to go for a taste of judgment here. Like you said, it reminds me of those winter warmers and those kind of a sneak peek of some of the beers we'll be probably getting into in about 3 months from now or so. So this is probably not the last we'll hear from porters. But I'm going to give this one a 3.5.
Okay.
nice stroll down memory lane. It's been a while since I've had a porter, but this is a fine brew. I can see definitely see where you're coming from on your four.
Yeah.
Not being adversarial in my rating at all, just more of a personal preference thing.
Oh, we're going to fight.
Oh, yes. We're throwing down.
During the live episode, one of the segments will be us battling.
Yeah, leg wrestling.
That's right. Oh, man, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's a fine brew. If you like porters,
yeah.
This is a great one to get.
You know, I think part of my rating comes from the fact that I haven't had a brew like this in a little while. I've had some coffee stouts recently, which are a little on the sweeter side. But this is, yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah, just like a return to something I like and haven't had for a while. So I'm feeling it more than I usually would.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. So thanks again, Aaron, for providing us, for sponsoring today's episode.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, if you'd like to join our friends of the show and sponsor us, just give one of us a beer, and we will definitely do it. It's so easy.
Yeah.
Michael, where can people find us on the internet?
All right, you can email us, get in the mailbag segment by just emailing us at apmpod@gmail.com, or throw us a tweet at apmpod on Twitter. On Facebook, APM Pod, kind of post news updates and stuff there sometimes, so that's a good one to follow.
Yep.
Also on Untapped, APM Pod, where we'll throw up our ratings, and iTunes.
Yes.
Give us a review there, give us a rating there, it's much appreciated. Subscribe, let your friends know.
Yep.
It's all good.
Yep.
So yeah, check us out on those places.
And Stitcher. We always forget Stitcher.
Oh, yes. And the old Stitcher.
The old Stitcher. I don't know if anybody uses it, but it's there if you need it.
It's there. We're there.
We are there. We are there. All right, Michael. This has been an excellent night for a very tasty beer. That's all for this one. That's all for Ep 28. So without any further ado, for Michael, I'm Mike.
And for Mike, I'm Michael.
And we will see you next time. Cheers.
Cheers.